If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the love of the Divine Presence. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. Today, our seminar topic is Be Still and Know I Am God, Transcending the Known Through Active Self-Inquiry and Revelation. So if you're ready, take a deep breath and call yourself forward into the presence of stillness. Just allow your energy to be centered here and now. Take another deep breath and call it forward. Evoke it. Evoke that place that's ever present with you, of perfect stillness and inner peace beyond thought and outer happenings. Bring the fullness of your being present in this place, this room, and let go of any other thing that you may be involved with. The mind can focus on one thing at a time. So multitasking is not what you want to do if you want to call yourself fully present here and now with this transmission. And take responsibility for your present state. If you're in any state of agitation, ask for the clearance. Ask that anything that could be cleared that you do not have to bear be cleared through grace. Take a deep breath. Let it go. And experience that when you ask for the clearance, it's done. So accept it as fact. Take responsibility always for your state. Don't just let life happen. Be proactive in directing your own state of spiritual and physical awareness. Now you can practice inner stillness until no matter where you are, what hullabaloo is taking place around you, you walk in your own bubble of stillness. You're in your own inner sanctuary. And just practice that. Practice it in traffic. Practice it at work, during board meetings, in crowded places, even when you're rushing to catch a plane. Practice staying centered and living above the phenomena of the outer physical dimension. So tonight we want to focus on going beyond where we've been, going beyond our training, our indoctrination, our beliefs, our, what have you, all the stuff that we've bought into that we operate out of almost by default without conscious awareness. And what we want to do is cultivate self-awareness. See, I'm starting to clear. Starting to clear a lot of stuff. Because our expression is connected with our speech, our throat chakra. So if you're finding your throat, like I'm finding mine, clearing stuff, clear your throat and let it clear. Hopefully that won't be too loud on a recording. But it's very important that we own our state and take responsibility for our state and do what we know to do to shift it so that it works proactively for us. So like so many of you, I spent much time this week watching the 2016 Olympic Games that were held in Rio de Janeiro. And as usual, I used the occasion as a source of deep inquiry into what is actually going on. I always use everything as a meditation for myself. So noticing and observing what is factual in a spiritual sense is an ongoing practice that I do and can recommend it highly. It keeps one living on purpose all the time. You know, you don't get slutky and, you know, off purpose if you keep your goal, you know, what you're intending to do, as much in alignment as those people walking the beams, those gymnasts. You saw the tremendous focus of intention that they had. Now, having spent my early years as an athlete in the form of a circus performer and a professional dancer in a dance company, I knew full well what it takes to discipline and master the physical body. My own life, like most of the athletes, was one of enduring constant physical pain, grueling hours of training and practice, and overriding one's own resistance, insecurities, fears, preferences, and comfort. And taking time off was seldom, if ever, an option, as was eating whatever you wanted to eat. I couldn't even practice many sports because I couldn't risk injuring my body. I had to always think, before I did anything, if this was going to affect my ability to perform. So if you hurt yourself, you simply taped up that sprained ankle or whatever it was and went on with your routine, no matter how much it hurt. And in the case of a circus performer or a dancer, you know, the show must go on, because others in the act are depending upon you, so you lay aside everything else to come forward and participate and fulfill your role. And we saw that so much in the teamwork, particularly with the American athletes. You saw such genuine love and caring and support that was extended to everyone. There were just many, many wonderful moments where you saw people putting aside their own personal benefit for the team. And that was such an example of the times that we're moving into now, where the paradigm is completely shifting from competition and personal ambition to a sense of cooperative endeavor, where we work together to make the whole thing work for everyone. So, speaking of the body, like most of these young athletes in their teens and early 20s, you really don't give any thought to your own mortality or your own physical fragility or what you're creating for yourself later on in life as you get older and those muscles turn to flab and that body that was so rock solid suddenly hurts everywhere. But at that stage in life, you just rarely give thought to the impermanence of the body and one's need to one day leave it all behind. And then, who are you? If you've not considered and made your life entirely around the physical body and its capacity to perform as the very center of your identity and existence, who are you when you can't perform anymore? What happens? And you can see this in so many former sports figures. They get replaced or badly injured or too old to perform, and suddenly they've lost their identity and purpose in life. Suddenly they've been replaced by other players, and now the fans are grouping and adoring, singing their praises. And pretty soon they fade from memory. So such is the way of fame and fortune and all the things of this world. Everything in life is but for a time and a season to be moved beyond to the next timing, the next season, the next whatever. So all things are impermanent. Change is the way of life in the temporal realms beneath the absolute God realms of spirit. Everything is moving to the next experience, the next state, the next unfoldment of awareness. So without knowing the inner self, who you are beyond the physical body and world, you'll feel great fear and loss when you lose your outer physical ability or suddenly find yourself beyond the physical body and physical world. Then what? So we need to be rehearsing how to live beyond this body and world all the time. This needs to be meditated on very seriously. Put yourself out beyond the world that you know, beyond the body that you've assumed was yourself, into your light body, and into the universe. And now what? What are you going to do? Who are you then? What are you going to move towards as your arena of creative expression? I mean, think about it. Meditate on it. We need to be learning how to move our inner awareness into the dimensions and worlds beyond this physical level. We need to experience that self that exists regardless of the world or dimension or whether it is in or out of physical incarnation. You got to know that self. You got to know that self. Beyond what you do, beyond your labels here, beyond your family, your friends, your associations, your job. Who are you beyond all of that? If all of that would vanish today, tonight, whenever, would you be yourself? Would you be self-realized? Would you know who you are? Would you have the joy of realizing your eternal, immortal self then, you know, apart from all the accoutrements of life? So it's the effort that gives one the strength and ability, both physically and spiritually. It's the effort you make. For example, consider a caterpillar. It's a worm, right? It crawls on leaves. It spins a cocoon around itself for a massive transformation. But if you want to help that caterpillar and try to cut into the cocoon, it's going to die. It must struggle to free itself in order to be able to fly free as a butterfly. And that is such an absolutely perfect example of what we go through. We think we are like a caterpillar of the earth, on the earth, dependent on the earth. But we go through a cycle where we're cocooned in the transformative process, which doesn't look like much from without. Much of it is internal, where it can't be seen. People can't see from without that you're in a transformative process. And then you struggle and struggle and struggle to break through the veils of the illusions, the Maya, the samsaras of this world, and you emerge as this wonderful transcendental winged, not really winged, but like winged, being that can fly free. But you have to do it yourself. Your ability to do that is forged out of the effort that you're making to realize who you are beyond the cocoon. Likewise, a small chick in the egg must peck itself free, because if you try to help it remove its shell, it will die. It has to have that strength built by personal struggle. So just like a good athlete has to struggle and overcome all of the limitations of the human body, and my heavens, did we see people transcend and break records and overcome the limitations of the human body. I mean, each Olympic game, it seems to take it to the next level. It's just extraordinary how we keep transcending our own what do you call it? Our own records, our own watermark at one Olympic game. We transcend, you know, and the next, and then the next. It keeps getting bigger and bigger and vaster and vaster. And so, a good parent, for example, prepares a child to leave home. I mean, think about that. If you're a good parent, everything you're doing for your child is to prepare it to leave you, to leave home, and to be able to live independently on their own. I mean, people, you know, hang on to their kids, but a good parent prepares the child to not need them. And every species encourages the independence of their offspring as necessary for survival. Now, spiritual survival requires even more independence. To move one's awareness into the spiritual realms and be able to secure yourself there, find your way around the light and the sound directives, and to function as a creative agent on one's own. I mean, think about it. We talk so much about soul transcendence and realizing God and returning home and all that, and I don't think most of us have a clue of what it is to stand facing eternity with no props, with no support, but one's own being. That sounds scary, doesn't it? But it's not. It's not. Because I've been practicing this for many, many, many years, decades actually. And so I speak from experience. But in the beginning, it's very scary because you're challenged with just externalizing from the physical body, you know, when you first start out on this path. So, excuse me, the movement of spiritual inner awareness requires self-initiated inner expansion beyond the known, beyond the mind, and familiarity. I think familiarity is like the death of creativity. As soon as you get stuck in anything to where it's like a habit and it's just familiar and you just settle into comfort, you're as good as dead. I mean, you just have to constantly fight the tendencies on the physical dimension of solidifying into form and getting entrapped therein, whatever the form is. I've tried my whole life to keep free. I have moved repeatedly. I left my home and family at the age of 13. I kept as much distance between my relatives and myself as possible. I wanted to be free. I've traveled all over. I keep shifting, so that I don't get stuck in any place for too long or with any person for too long. It sounds crazy, but I've had to do that to fulfill and consummate my own spiritual destiny. So at every point, one must have the self-awareness, self-confidence, and self-reliance to face the unknown without fear or hesitation. And yeah, you're going to feel fear and hesitation when you have to face the unknown. I've been asked to do things on the inner planes where I shook so hard on the inner planes that I woke up trembling in the physical. So these things are not easy. We go through many, many tests on the astral plane for courage and the ability, for example, to leap into the void without knowing whether you're going to be dashed on the rocks or you're going to sprout wings or there's going to be a big hand that comes up under you. You don't know. So you have to trust yourself. If you don't trust yourself and have confidence in yourself, and I'm not talking about your ego, I'm talking about that self, that core self that you are. You've got to find it, and you've got to have absolute self-trust and self-confidence, absolutely, as a foundation for any further enlightenment. So we start by practicing here on Earth by facing and overcoming our little personal fears and insecurities. We just do it. You just do it scared. You do whatever you have to do. But once you do whatever it is that you're so afraid of doing, you'll find that the fear transforms into empowerment. So that's where you get your empowerment, is by doing it scared. Likewise, practice random acts of courage as often as you can. Confront, face, transcend your limitations, your fears, your personal hesitancy, your procrastination, your avoidance, your denials. Have the courage to be yourself, no matter what. Just dare to live your own life by your own terms and values. You know, don't be obnoxious, but find a way to do what you have to do as lovingly and with as much consideration for others as you possibly can, but be true to yourself above all else. So this familiar biblical saying, "Be still and know that I am God," is one of those many, many spiritual directives that are quoted, but very seldom given any further consideration. But in the night, last night, I awakened to that phrase in my mind, "Be still and know that I am God." And it was there throughout the night. Every time I would surface into awareness, that was going on in my mind like a mantra. And as I awakened this morning, there it was again. And so I knew I needed to go deeply into what this meant to me. And I suspected it was what I was to share with you in the seminar. I thought about it in terms of the average person and realized that the majority of people on this planet have no idea what it means to be truly still. How seldom, even if ever, does one experience stillness? I mean, you know, if you're on a spiritual path, you probably have, but I'm talking about the average person on the street. Because even if the body is sitting still, the mind chatter is going on continuously. And as far as I know, that knowing that I am God, well, where do you think people fare with that question? Be still and know that I am God. Well, I suppose probably nearly everyone assumes that that means to take time to know God, usually in the religious sense. Usually it's all put under that label. So I suppose countless contemplative orders have probably taken that scriptural, "Be still and know that I am God," as their theme for their retreats. Some of these undoubtedly were silent retreats, quote, quote, where retreatants refrain from outer speech, but the mind never stops its chattering. So nearly always the retreat would suggest for one to take time to study the scriptures and to practice silent contemplation. But all they're doing is recycling the known, recycling the information that is not only very, very old and translated by many, many people, but in a sense it's dead unless you come alive to it from within yourself. It's just dead letters and a dead book. You have to do something in yourself to quicken and activate that spark. So, in other words, you just study the known and the commentaries of those who kept seeking but probably never found what they were seeking. They probably never found it because they were all looking outside of themselves to others for their answers and to give them an understanding of the meaning, but never really internalizing it or inquiring what it meant to them within themselves. Probably most, at least here in the Western world, settle for the Judeo-Christian belief that God exist somehow outside of oneself and apart from our physical life, that God is seated up high somehow on a heavenly throne, and that he told his Moses his name was I Am That I Am. And that's usually where it stays with a lot of people. Now, if you take that at surface value, what in the world can you do with that information? I mean, really, what can you do with that information? One can but relegate it to very ancient stories of another time and another age conveyed to people long gone. So, hello, what does that mean to you and me today? So, most must leave all of that completely to inquire into the self rather than to just completely relegate it to theologians and clergymen and biblical scholars and simply get on with life as best you can, which is, I think, probably what most people do. They completely separate the spiritual life from everyday life. So it's no wonder that often people will give you a blank stare or a quizzical look if you ask them about God. Either that or they'll quote their religious belief or their indoctrination. But nearly all have no idea of who or what God is, other than what they may have been taught in Sunday school. I really think about that. Those of you who are light workers, long time on the spiritual path, you're probably way beyond that, but I'm speaking to a lot of you who are counselors, who are teachers, who are working like myself with people in all different levels of understanding and none. But you'll find that nearly everyone is taking their information as the knowledge gleaned from others, but not from their own direct inquiry and revelation. So I suggest that the known is always old and dead, because the known is always of the past. It's never what is truly here and now as a fact of present existence. And that's why I think no matter how many retreats and seminars we attend or how many scriptures and spiritual books we read, the effect is only temporary. There's no lasting transformation because we cannot be transformed from without, but only from within. And I dare to say only by our own efforts. No matter how great the master or teacher, they can at best point out the way as way showers. But each individual must find and walk that way for themselves. So spiritual knowledge and realization and revelation can only come from one's own inner inquiry. In Sanskrit, the word for that is vicharana. It means deep, probing, relentless insights into a topic where you go deep beneath the surface, beneath the common understanding, beneath your own known whatever you've taken on as the way it is and as the truth. You have to keep going beyond, going beyond, going beyond. And it's a pathless path in a sense, and it's an endless path because there's always more. In a spiritual life, there's always deeper. There's always more. So you yourself must make the effort to know yourself. And thus, on knowing yourself, discover for yourself God and your purpose in life. Unless you know yourself, you can't know God, because they're one and the same when you get deep, deep into that. But I can't tell you that. You have to discover it for yourself. Otherwise, you always have doubts. So great motivational coaches can get you all fired up and show you how to get into the correct state of mind. They can teach you a technique, but you must do the daily practice and follow through until you succeed. You do need a good coach, but you alone can make yourself a champion. Many of us have been watching the interaction between the coaches and the athletes during the Olympics. So we have many examples of the years of hard and painful work it took and the cooperation between the coaches and their athletes to win a medal. You see it in a very, very clear demonstration, the personal effort that goes into what it takes to get that medal and how the personal effort counts. You can't attain that level of physical and mental mastery through reading about it or through watching the efforts of others. And that's an exact analogy of how reading about and watching others spiritually is not going to do it for you. Spiritual strength and ability is created in the same manner as the athlete develops that strength and ability. And it's the focus and the discipline of focus and the mastery and the transcending of the mind. You must get to that place where you can say, just as Jesus did, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And you must know that, not in theory, but by direct realization and revelation. And it's not an arrogant statement, it's an absolute factual statement, because every single person, in the divine sense, is the way, the truth, and the life. Everyone. But that's not coming out of the lower nature and the personal self and the ego. It's coming out of direct divine encounter with one's true self. So how does one go about this, developing this level of spiritual and mental strength and transcending the mind? Well, use the spiritual ideas and the keys and whatever you've discovered in seminars or by reading discourses and spiritual books or listening. But use all of those things as inspiring directives for deeper inner inquiry. Let them motivate you to go beyond, to go deeper. I'm finding now as I read many, many, many books after, as I said, decades of spiritual practice, that I'm recognizing my own states now as I read the places people have gotten to. It's like, oh, yeah, I recognize it because I've been there, done that, and I'm beyond that to something else. So now I've pretty much run out of books because they're simply taking me as far as where most books take you, which is the top of the mental plane. Very, 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 gosh, I can't even think of any, books take you beyond the mental plane. That's where most religions end up, at the very top. It's called Trikuti or Kaleshwara. Mount Kailash, or Kailash, however you pronounce it. They take you to that place on the inner planes, which is the top of the mental plane, but no further. And so to go further, you have to transcend the mind. And books just keep you recycling back into the known, into the mind, which is very painful for me to realize, because one of the things I really enjoy doing is reading spiritual books. But now, you know, it's time to go beyond all of that. I remember when I was with Sai Baba, one of my trips, I held up to him several little murtis, little divine images that I wanted him to bless for my altar. And he looked at me and he said, Bas, enough. You know, in Hindi it means enough. And I realized, oh, these are like the toys of my childhood. And all my little images, my little altars, my little nests of idealism, as he calls it for me. And it's like, yeah, you have to outgrow the things of your spiritual childhood and infancy and adolescency. You got to grow up and beyond those things. And it's a good thing when you outgrow your practice and your spiritual group and your little familiar rituals and things. It's a good thing. You know, it leaves you feeling kind of lost because you have to go deeper and find something else to come up with. But once you begin to strike that inner gold, you know, you begin to dig deep and you start to get into that inner treasure trove, you're never going to want to settle for the second-hand information after that, or third-hand information. No more. You'll outgrow religion. You'll outgrow all spiritual groups. You'll outgrow all practices, all rituals, all formal rites, all of it. And you'll come to a place where your heart speaks volumes in the silence of divine adoration, which has no outer projection. You're caught up in a sense of such wholeness and fullness of being and the excitement of being truly free and truly whole and truly fulfilled that you just want to roll all over yourself like a cat in catnip. The essence is so delicious. So I would suggest that instead of continually outsourcing, asking others to pray for you or send you the light, learn to have direct access and communion with the divine within yourself. You are the light. It is not something one sends and receives from without, but it's an inner recognition of the fact of who and what you are forever. And that is where you learn by your own efforts how to utilize your mind as it was intended to be used, which is like a focused laser beam for inner inquiry and revelation. You develop a one-pointed concentration so that you penetrate beyond the known into the depths of your innermost knowing and being. The mind thus focused is silent and easily transcended into direct knowing and awareness. When you're totally, totally into whatever it is, and that's why you really have to be hungry in a spiritual sense and really intent in order to hold that focus. If you're kind of wishy-washy and don't really care about what you're trying to focus on, the mind drifts all over the place. So it has to be something that you truly, truly love and are truly able to focus 100% attention into it. So the mind must be trained to focus and concentrate and to bring all of its attention to bear upon the given topic, which is absolutely impossible if it's so formless, so abstract, so nebulous that you really can't get any kind of an idea going that you could feel affectionate towards. That's why the instruction is always suggested that in this age in which we live, the easiest path is the one of bhakti or devotion, where you take the name and the form of God, the one that causes your heart to soar with love, and you focus on that form and you repeat that name, and you cultivate a relationship with that particular form. And that is one of the easiest, maybe not the easiest, but it's one of the most effective ways to approach the divine life during the Kali Yuga and the transition now into the Golden Age. So the path of devotion, the path of love, the path of offering your life and all of your actions to your beloved chosen ideal. And it doesn't matter what it is, but you have to have full trust, confidence, and love for that particular form of God that you choose to focus on. So the mind must be trained to focus and concentrate. You can't just assume that you can master it without making the effort. It takes time. You have to keep bringing it back to the focus. As often as it wanders off, don't judge it, don't criticize it, just bring it back, bring it back, bring it back to the name, bring it back to the form, bring it back to the form, bring it back to the name. You know, whenever it wanders, keep it channeled in the right direction. So the mind becomes lazy and weak by continually asking others to answer the questions only you can answer for yourself. You know, you see people who have been in a spiritual group for years, and they're still asking the same questions. The mind is lazy. It's not been exercised. It's not been used. They're depending totally for someone else to give them the answers. So instead of doing that, why don't you ask yourself? Ask yourself the question that you would ask somebody else. And then be still and listen and write down your own answers. So what if they're wrong? So what if they're not wrong? Have the faith to know that when you ask a question and you hear an inner answer, that part of you that's responding is giving you the answer you need at this time. Whatever it is, it's for you. So go with it. Learn to ask better questions, more precise questions. But ask yourself. Give yourself the answer. You might be surprised that greater part of you has all the answers you'll ever need. But if you don't ask yourself, if you're always outsourcing to others for their information, you're just lazy. So quit it. You see, nearly all religions and spiritual groups have become personality cults that have grown up around some person who is considered to have all the answers or greater wisdom. So in such a setting, one is tempted to relegate all responsibility for oneself to another, and to simply parrot the teacher and his knowledge and teaching, or her knowledge and teaching, but to go no further. And when you do that, there's no visible transformation whatsoever. Because the individual who only follows another makes no effort to take responsibility for themselves. So they end up with nothing to show for that incarnation. Who are they if that teacher passes away? Then what do they do? What do they do when they pass away and their teacher has passed away? What then? Very, very few of those teachers in the outer world have the conscious ability to work with you when they have passed out of their body. They're generally off doing something else. They're not staying around and repeating what they've already completed. So if you're not in a bona fide lineage that takes responsibility for you personally, or under a teacher who really is qualified and able to work with you both in the body and beyond the body, good luck. And that's the case with most groups and most people. Many people don't know how to correctly pick a teacher and validate whether or not that teacher can actually produce, because they don't have the ability to go inward and check them spiritually, or to go with that teacher on the inner realm and see what realm they're operating out of, because they can't take you beyond where they've gone. So you may need to be very discerning in who you place your spiritual life in the care of. And personally, I think the best one to put your spiritual life in the care of is your own divine self. So it pays to get acquainted with that part of yourself. So we really need to take a good hard look at our inner and outer life and ask ourselves if there's been any lasting visible transformation. Let's say you've been in a group 10, 20, 30 years. What do you have to show for that? If you're still having the same weaknesses, bad habits, problems, worries, and concerns that you had years ago, then there's been no transformation. If your life is still all about you, your problems, your worries, your issues, and personal concerns, even after years with your teacher and your spiritual practice, you've not had any transformation. If all of your questions are still about personal life 101 and its issues, after years with your group or teachers, there has been no transformation. You've settled and relegated to another giving, taking the responsibility to know and realize your own self, and that's impossible. Another can't realize you. Only you can realize you. So if you don't know who you are after all those outer initiations, sorry to say, but you've been too lazy to look for yourself. You've settled with allowing another to live your life for you. And no one but you can live your life and realize your true self but you. So if you have placed all of your values and efforts upon attaining the things of this physical dimension, such as physical health, beauty, success, fame, money, romance, clothes, houses, cars, and stuff, you'll be coming back here again and again, for you've demonstrated where your heart is. So it's wise not to fool yourself if you're really serious in getting off this wheel of reincarnation and karma. You got to take some responsibility for what you're doing and spending your time doing with your life. Now, bear in mind, we're speaking to those of you who have said that you wanted to fully awaken spiritually, to become self and God realized, or to soul transcend beyond the need to reincarnate on the physical planet again. You are the ones I'm speaking to. So if that's you, you'll need to be very honest with yourself and look to see if your daily life habits, your thought life, the things that you're absorbed in and involved with, if those things and whatever it is you're focusing on, if they align with your spiritual transcendence or not. And if it does, then you will give up, sacrifice, let go, and do anything it takes to transcend the lusts, attractions, distractions of this world. You will be still, know, and realize, I am God. And only you can answer what that means. What does it mean to you to be still? What does it mean to you to know? What does it mean to you, I am God? When you say that to yourself, do you have any semblance of reality? I am God. Any experience? What is God? Go into it deeply. How have I experienced God? What comes to mind when I hear the word God? Do I know for myself directly the divine presence beyond the concept, beyond the mental projection and image and all the rhetoric that's been built up through centuries around God? Maybe use a different word. I am love. I am truth. I am light. I am Christ. I am the Beloved. But cozy around the idea of internalizing that as presence, as present presence. Begin to work with that and work with it. Be relentless. Keep inquiring and going deeper. And go ahead and ask yourself, what is stillness? Have I a tangible experience of being completely still, beyond fear, beyond worry? Have I ever experienced a moment of perfect stillness? Do I have a reference point for that? Probe deeply and keep going deeper and deeper. And when you have a question, move to your knowing. What is your answer? What comes up for you when you ask yourself a question? Because it's your knowing that counts, and not that of anyone else. What do you know directly about whatever it is that you're asking? Now, obviously, I'm talking about those matters that have to do with a deeper life. You know, if you're talking about physical things, you can get a guidebook or a how-to book, or, you know, pick up the phone, Google, whatever. I'm talking about inner states of consciousness here. Well, you know, you ask practical questions, how to get here and here and do this and do that. Physically, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about those questions of who am I, where have I come from, why am I here, what's my purpose, where do I go when I'm no longer in the physical body? What is truth? What is real? What do I do when I leave this body and in another dimension and state? Who am I then? What am I then? What am I doing? What am I about? So, how have you personally experienced your divine self or God? Have you ever experienced divine revelation of a completely clean, fresh knowing that wasn't gotten from an outer source, that didn't come to you by someone else's means, but was revealed to you personally? And have you ever experienced your own divinity? So keep going beyond the known, beyond your beliefs and indoctrinations. Get into direct holy communion and revelation. And keep going until you have transcended all phenomena, all thought, all mind stuff, into the sense of pure, limitless spaciousness. Just pure, spacious awareness, beyond body, beyond form. And keep your awareness always open, observing, listening, but free from getting hooked by the outer things of the world and what others are doing and saying. That's none of your business. You're not here to fix others or to tell them how to live or what to do. That is their responsibility. When you interfere with another person's right to be, do, and say, and exist however they choose, it's like cutting that cocoon open. You're robbing that person, that child, that individual of having the experiences they need to survive. Leave them alone. Have enough faith in your children, in your spouse, in your siblings, whoever, to know that they have the same divine presence and opportunity within themselves. But if they don't find it for themselves, they won't have the strength to sustain it. So encourage them. Set a really good example. But let them be free to make their mistakes and to do whatever they have to do. Because we learn here by our failure and our mistakes much more than we do by our successes. So don't deprive anyone of their failures and their whatever it is that they have put themselves in. They need to learn how to get themselves out of that state to have the strength to be able to live beyond whatever it was that was pulling them down. So live within your own inner paradise, within your own golden age, within your own ascended mastery. Live true to your heart, your conscience, your truest self. Be self-determined, self-realized, and free of the personal self. Live from your vastness, from your universal self, and manifest as impersonal service to all life. Know that you are a divine functionary, an inlet for the divine spirit to pour light and love and wisdom and clarity into this dimension. And in so doing, you are assisting in the transfiguration and transcendence of all the atoms of this material and psychic composite of creation beneath the soul realm. All that is within the realms of impermanence and change and suffering, you are one who has come in to be an inlet of transformation and freedom. And that is the greatest purpose you could possibly hold before yourself. So I hope this has been helpful to you. It's sometimes very painful to look at what is, particularly if we've been a little lazy and have gotten too comfortable down here in this material world and have made the things of this world more important than what we know we have to do to live in the higher states of consciousness. But it was offered with love and from my own direct experience. And we rise or we fall together, because in highest truth we are one, even though we appear as many. And we're all going to be going home together, a home that in highest truth we've never, ever left. But the discovery and the journey is what we're sharing together in time-space. So let's take a deep breath and go out chanting Anai Hu three times. May all the beings of all the worlds have peace and happiness. Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu. Peace and love and grace to all. Namaste.